It was the craziest religious education class ever. Minster Hill was an unusual teacher. While most teachers kept spare jotters, textbooks and chalk in their classroom cupboard, Mr. Hill, the RE teacher, kept a coffin in his. Andy was a magician. He did magic tricks, and one of his favourites, which he liked to use with honoured guests, in this case moi, was his wrist slicer. A small but very sharp guillotine. And he would place a carrot below the blade, slice, cut in two, neat, surgical. Then he would put a courgette below the blade, slice, cut in two, neat, surgical. Now just pop your hand in there, below the blade, he would say. The sharp, surgical, slicing blade. Trust me, he said. You'll be all right. Eyes shut very tightly. Down came the blade. I shudder still at the memory. Well, they made a pretty good job of sewing it back on, though table tennis is not advised. Faith. People are so snooty about it. For such an everyday thing that we all have. Faith. We all show. We all need. People make such a fuss, downgrade it, seem to suggest that anyone who has it, uses it, allows it any place in their life, is somehow a credulous dupe. But that's not how it is in the real world. That's just not how people really function. There's tons of faith around, oodles of faith. We're all at it, need it, live by it. One thing you will never have to worry about is that you will lose your minister in a paragliding accident. It isn't ever going to happen. Two of my best friends went paragliding, strapped to an instructor, an experienced instructor. Well, you would think. Now, let's jump off this mountain. That's faith. Paragliding, one sport where the old adage, if at first you don't succeed, has little appeal. Pretty soon there's a small group from the congregation going to Scotland. It'll be a great experience. It's a kind of pilgrimage. They'll get the flavour. I wonder if they might be going out for a walk at Landmark, the nature centre near Aviemore in the Highlands, where you can see Scottish wildlife in its natural habitat. It's all a bit Indiana Jones. There's a shaky rope bridge with narrow, shugly planks. It wobbles, it looks a bit flimsy, but off you go, across the ravine. Dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. And as you walk across the spider's web bridge that looks so fragile and sways so gentle, that's faith. Lindy only took up skiing when we came here. She loves it. But you have to have faith. If you've ever gone skiing, you know you go up in a gondola or a cable car, hundreds of feet up. The wire seems so thin, the pylons, the construction team, you've got to believe in them, that's faith. Or every time you get on an aeroplane or on a train, is the driver any good? Did the pilot get enough sleep last night? Up and up and up you go, trusting, believing, that's faith. Not blind faith, but faith just the same. You can't check every detail. You have to put your trust in so many people. The captain, the engineers, the maintenance crew, the security team, the food providers, the air traffic controllers. Now that's living by faith. So you can talk about it till you're blue in the face. But the crucial difference between belief and faith is that you have to do something. The famous story of Blondin standing at the Niagara Falls looking at the wire that went all the way across and saying to people, do you believe I can carry you across the wire on my back? Yes, Mr. Blondin, we believe. Right, up you get. Hop on. No, hang on a minute. That's different. But if you don't walk across, if you don't get on board, if you don't trust, then it's not faith. Theory is not faith. And in real life, there is nothing theoretical about the faith we show in countless contexts. Faith is doing it. And without faith, we won't be doing much. You can't check and cross-check everything. Sometimes we just have to believe. There was a documentary recently called The 10-Pound Palms about a time when British people could emigrate to Australia for just £10. In those days, Australia seemed a long way away. No WhatsApp and FaceTime to keep up with the news of how the immigrants were doing. All you had were letters, and people could write anything. You just had to believe what they were saying about their great new job and their lovely new house, these new arrivals. You didn't see it, but you believed it. It could all have been made up. People do that. People do that a lot these days. But the family told them it was so, gave them reason to believe. Who tells you it helps you to believe it? We try not to believe any old tripe. We wonder, what are the sources? Do they have an agenda? Might there be bias here? Have they done their homework? Is it an example of what they call in the world of AI hallucination, where they just make up the answer rather than not seem to know the answer? Faith is quite the fashion in some quarters, therapy sessions, wellness retreats and such, where they play trust games, where you fall or you're led blindfold. Do you believe I will catch you? Help me get you over your trust issues. Fall backwards into my arms. I will be there. We all do it. Show a little faith. I love the story of John Peyton, who in his early childhood wanted to be a missionary. Before studying theology and medicine, Peyton served for 10 years as a Glasgow City missionary. After graduation, he was ordained and set sail for the New Hebrides as a Presbyterian missionary. 3 months after arriving on the island of Tanna, Peyton's young wife died, followed by their 5-week-old son. For 3 more years, Peyton laboured alone among the hostile islanders, ignoring their threats, seeking to make Christ known to them, before escaping with his life. Later he returned and spent 15 years on another island. Peyton was working one day in his home on the translation of John's Gospel, puzzling over John's favourite expression, to believe in or to trust in Jesus Christ, a phrase which first occurs in John 1 verse 12. How can I translate it? Peyton wondered. The islanders were cannibals. Nobody trusted anybody else. There was no word for trust in their language. His native servant came in. What am I doing? Peyton asked him. Sitting at your desk, the man replied. Peyton then raised both feet off the floor and sat back on his chair. What am I doing now? In reply, Peyton's servant used a verb which means to lean your whole weight upon. That's the phrase. That's the phrase Peyton used throughout John's Gospel to translate to believe in. To lean your whole weight upon. I've got a wedding coming up next month. Marriage, there's a leap of faith. Not blind faith, we don't know all the answers, but we do know some. We know enough of the answers. We know what true feelings are in our hearts. We have reasons to believe. No absolute proof. Sorry, we can't do that. But we do that. So faith is not something naive, just something necessary. It's not about being gullible. Reality cannot be understood and life cannot be lived on the basis of one simply oft-repeated mantra, seeing is believing. Regardless of how often it's repeated, it simply won't do. It isn't enough. It doesn't fit. Not your life, not mine, not anybody's. We, all of us, step across its arbitrary limits constantly. And without blushing with shame that we've overstepped some imagined boundary of rationality. And strangely, scientists are among the people who have most faith. The process of scientific thought and investigation, that wonderful human endeavour that seeks to make sense of the world and unravel its mysteries. We should recognise that even that enterprise involves belief. Indeed, not only embraces that dynamic, but actually depends upon it, if the scientific adventure is to lead us anywhere. Sir Richard Gregory, former editor of Nature, says, science is not to be regarded merely as a storehouse of facts to be used for material purposes, but as one of the great human endeavours to be ranked with arts and religion as the guide and expression of man's fearless quest for truth. The essential presumption of the scientific discipline, he says, is that we're required to move beyond what we know and bravely explore the realm of what we don't know, what is mere hypothesis, the creed of, I wonder, what if? Imagine we looked at this as yet unknown possibility. Where might we end up without that courageous step into the unknown? Science would be sterile and static. Once the scientist has the conviction that such a possibility, as yet unrealized and uninvestigated, might reward research and consideration, the universe begins to surrender its secrets. Professor J.R. Oppenheimer comes clean about the world of science. In a world in which doubt is not only a permissible thing, but in which doubt is the indispensable method of aiming at truth. Earnest, unshakable convictions about cause and effect, the profound belief that there are answers and there must be answers to be found, that solutions to problems do exist, even though we can't see them at present. With our whole heart, we believe they are there to be found. That's what drives the researcher, the deviser of hypotheses, as he or she strives to unpick the puzzle that is the world, the universe, existence as we encounter it and as it intrudes into our reality. A firm belief that there is order, there are systems to be uncovered and understood. The scientist believes that there is an internal logic to reality. There are reasons to be found, and that's why we must keep on looking, searching in the mist and the mystery. And doggedly, despite countless setbacks, the scientist will drive towards those insights with a passionate determination and a conviction that eventually the key will be found that will unlock the enigma. Lots of faith around in the scientific endeavour. Which brings us to the story we read about the healings of Jesus, the faith of the anxious father, the faith of the desperate woman. I'm a bit embarrassed to confess that my first reaction to the story is jealousy. You see, in my work as a parish minister, I have to sit by bedsides, and I can't do that stuff, that get up and walk stuff, that you are healed, come alive again stuff. I wish I could, it would be wonderful if I could. If I never had to deal with grief-stricken parents for whom there has been no miraculous turn of events, that would be just amazing. But I can't do that quick fix thing, so I have to find other answers to give to the angry, anxious, heartbroken parents. Faith takes me of necessity into a different place than simple answers and reassuring solutions, to a hard place, a stretching place. I had the misfortune a couple of summers ago to watch Satellite Religion, and it really was a strange and disturbing experience. The people on these TV programs do it differently. Their brand of belief is nothing like my religious universe. For the satellite religious, it's all quick fixes, easy answers to complex conundrums, certainties and miracles and explosions of glory. There are not so many questions. There is not so much mystery. There are no empty spaces. Now, it's not for me to write that whole cottage industry off, though I do reserve the right to challenge the shameless snake oil salesmen and women who exploit gullibility and vulnerability with such artless venality. But my religion, my faith, which I like to think is deep and meaningful and precious, doesn't see much of the dead being raised and the lame walking. Some might wonder if maybe it's become too in the mind, too intellectual, too controlled, too cerebral, too considered. Just believe the promises, they would tell me, eyes shining. Maybe, maybe. But I think for a lot of people, we have to find our way through the story, our faith story, without the benefits of the extraordinary and the dramatic. And the prayers we pray with equal sincerity and with just as much reality and passion find a different answer from the brash assurance of those who, it appears, leap with a whoop of triumph from their wheelchairs. I have to be week in, week out with those who don't leap, those who are still locked into the prison of their blindness, their pain, their loss, their aging body, and have to deal with that. I have to find faith for that reality, faith for the long haul, the long, hard haul. They have to meet their Jesus somehow, somewhere, in the harsh, unchanging reality of the pain and separation, when the child they loved has not got out of that bed, and the husband they love did not spring free from the clutches of illness, and the prayers they wrenched from their torn hearts received a very different answer. There are no quick fixes for some of us. for most of us. And here's the question that raises. When there is no miracle that liberates us from the pain, does that mean our faith is weak? Or does it mean that it is miraculously strong? You see, for me, that's no less miraculous that people who didn't get what they wanted from God, who prayed till their hearts burst for things to change only to find they hadn't changed, for those people to keep on praying, to keep on worshipping, to continue to serve and to sing, that is no small miracle of God's grace. And I see that miracle Sunday by Sunday by Sunday. Real faith lives in the mystery, accepts the disappointments, goes on believing when there is no magic, when the answer to our prayer is no, or not now, or not for you. Faith that keeps on when that happens, that is real faith.